This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everyone. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob is presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort, and it is a Friday edition of the program, which means it's going to be full of hilarity and laughs and fun and information and clowns and streamers and balloons, Dave. That's what we do on Fridays.
Yes, we do. And mean texts are going to come early for me because at 5 o'clock we have Dave Craig, and we're going to have a discussion slash argument with
about
Dave Craig. Whatever. Whether you call it a slice of gum or a stick of gum.
Oh, that's some of my favorite interaction is to watch you two communicate. I'm just going to sit back and listen. It's always worth it. You don't want to miss that conversation at 5 o'clock. The great Dave Craig will join us and get under the skin of Dave Wyman at five o'clock.
I'm sorry to interrupt. You know how, like I say, Tyler Lockett, he finds himself wide open.
Yeah.
You know, it's like every time I have a conversation with Dave, I find myself in an argument. And it was like, how did this happen? And then one of my good friends, Sam Merriman, who a lot of people know, Idaho guy, was a great linebacker here for the Seahawks. He the other day they were on a conference call, and I was like, and Sam's like, yeah, he was arguing with me last night watching Reservoir Dogs or something like that. And I'm like, geez, there seems to be a common denominator here, Dave.
Yeah, there's a theme to this whole thing because he's priceless. He is a piece of work, and he's going to join us at 5 o'clock today. Our buddy Big Ray Roberts at 3 o'clock. We haven't caught up with him in quite some time, so that'll be great to talk to him and the professor at 4. And I'm sure with all three of these guys, we'll talk about the search for their defensive coordinator now that you've got – what, four names out there, Dave? For me, I was looking at this last night and trying to figure out, all right, which one would be the best, since you don't have a ton of knowledge on some of these guys, you know, some of the younger guys that don't have a history in the spotlight. Yeah, they've been on staffs, they've had different roles on different staffs, but they haven't been the man, if you will. They haven't been a coordinator for the most part.
Right.
It's hard to have a hardcore opinion on those guys other than looking at what the defense is doing under their defensive coordinator. So you wonder, all right, what's their role? How much of an impact? It was like Waldron. When Shane Waldron came over, we were talking about, you know, well, the Rams offense, that's going to be exciting here. And I kept saying, well, we don't know if that's what it's going to look like because that wasn't his offense. He was in it, but that wasn't his per se. So you wonder, all right, if we're looking at you know, Desai and looking at Chicago, is that what the defense he's got in mind, or how responsible is he for what you're seeing with that team? Versus same with Witt and Dallas, how responsible is he? He's under Coach Quinn out there, so it's hard to get a read on some of these guys and determine exactly what they bring to the table. Other than if Pete and John are requesting to speak to them, they see something that's familiar, something that's appealing. They're not going to bring somebody in here who's got a radical idea that says, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to have just two down linemen and drop everybody into coverage, and we're going to, you know what I mean? He has an idea of what they're bringing to the table. Otherwise, they're not going to waste everybody's time with a conversation.
Yeah, and, you know, the more you talk through it, you know, like you were talking about fresh eyes and things like that, the less I think it's going to be Clint Hurt. Just because he also has never been a defensive coordinator. And, I mean, Desai has, but Witt has not. And then, you know, that's not going to give you fresh eyes. So, you know, and I love Clint. I mean, Professor said he was the best D-line coach in the league. I don't know, you know, how you measure that, but I think he's an unbelievably good coach. Just because watching him run his drills – how committed he is to the little things, and then just haven't had conversations with him. I used to, on the away trips, go down and sit next to him on the bench, and at first I was like, hey, are you concentrating, or is this a ritual for you? And he's like, no, man, sit down. So I would sit and talk to him, and I just think the way he communicates is really, really good. But I feel like, you know, based on those things, he's got the least chance, because if they want fresh eyes, which I do think they do, and you know, you've got a guy that's never done it before. You know, that's but I would say, well, I would say that actually, you know, he would probably be third, because Joe Witt never has been a coordinator. You get the fresh eyes thing, but, you know, he's been a pass game coordinator. It's kind of weird, too, that the last his experience as a pass coordinator is 4 years in a row at four different teams. He started in Green Bay in 2018, then he went to Cleveland, then he went to Atlanta, and then he went to Dallas. And Dallas, they were number one in takeaways. So, you know, you've got that. And then, you know, you've got Sean Desai, who does have some experience and some pretty good numbers as far as, you know, their defense, you know, with sacks. And, you know, they were pretty good against the pass. No, they were really good, actually. I mean, they were number three in the league. They're only giving up 191 yards. But, you know, the more I think about it, and it's just, look, it's been 11 years for Ed Donatell that he's been a defensive coordinator. He does have a connection with Pete, but I don't think it's such a strong connection that you won't get fresh ideas. And, you know, just he's the only guy that I know that I've been around. You know, I just remembered this, that he was I don't know what his position was at Washington, but he was at UW for a year. And we had a football camp over there when I was coaching Interlake with Big Ray Roberts, and who we'll talk to at 3. And I remember him coming over and go, hey, so what are you running here? What are you doing? Everything. So, I mean, I know Ed. I think he's a really good guy. His son coached, was a, I think, quality control guy and assistant, I think, defensive back coach. And he's now with the Chargers. So the more I look at it, I mean, if you had to answer right now, I feel like that'd be by far the safest bet, and especially the fact that he's been a defensive coordinator for 11 years in the NFL,
right,
and in the last three in Denver.
A couple of opinions on these guys. Jake and Stacy had some people on that cover both the Bears and the Cowboys yesterday, and here's Jory Epstein of USA Today, Cowboys beat reporter, giving a thought on Joe Witt.
We've seen a lot of work done to this defense as a whole, and Joe Witt has been a clear part of it. It's very telling when we interview guys like Mike McCarthy and Dan Quinn, and they're mentioning what Joe Witt does, whether it's Dan Quinn telling us, look, Joe Witt is the champion of making sure we're running the same defense, different defenses from the same looks and creating that multiplicity. And Mike McCarthy saying right away, if we lose Dan Quinn, which we don't want to, Joe Witt is on staff.
Yeah, you know, I think, and that kind of further clarifies what the passing game coordinator does. You know, he if you get focused in as the defensive coordinator, and, you know, you're supposed to get the right personnel on the field, you're trying to look at what they're playing. And as she said there, that he is, you know, responsible for, you know, getting them in different looks and running the same coverage. And that's kind of what the NFL is about. You only run so many defenses, right? There's only so many coverages. But what you want to do is do it from different looks. It's the illusion of complexity.
Dave. Huh? Those are guardages.
No, they're not. But it's the illusion of complexity on defense. So, you know, just like what you get with offense. So that kind of further clarifies what he's done. And that's another, you know, plus for him is the fact that he worked under Dan Quinn, who Dan Quinn, I would think, you know, he takes a lot away from his years here as a coordinator in Seattle.
The second cut is from Patrick Finley from the Chicago Sun-Times, obviously covering the Chicago Bears, and talking about situations that arose with the Bears defense and Desai's role in that.
Matt Nagy got fired because Matt Nagy's offense didn't work. The defense was fine. And, you know, it looks like he's going to be part of the breakup. But, you know, I can't imagine that the Bears would bring him back if they're going to rebuild completely with a new GM and a new coach here.
That was Patrick Finley, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked to him on the huddle. But, he's right about that. And when you look at what was the two things I complained about the most were the amount of yardage. I think your biggest complaint, Bob, was time of possession.
Yeah.
You know, and that absolutely goes hand in hand. And then the passing game. I mean, my gosh, it was too complicated, you know, for guys that even were, you know, like Bobby. There were mistakes, there were errors made, and, you know, they were number 31 in pass defense the last 2 years. And, you know, here's a guy that's allowed just 191 yards, which is pretty amazing. So, Yeah, that's and I'll have to find Kenny's numbers, but that was definitely an area where they really, yeah, he was giving up 265 as opposed to Desai was giving up 191 per game. Mm. And then the year before that, he was giving up 285 yards per game in the passing game. So, yeah, 191, anything under 200 is amazing, and he got that done. So, it's just, you know, I think it's going to come down also to, you know, what does he say to Pete? It's kind of a feel thing, I think, and probably, you know, what kind of stuff is he saying in those meetings, which I would imagine if you're going to bring a guy in, you probably want to get him up on the board, like Moyer said when he interviewed with the Raiders.
Right.
And then you want to go through film, and then you want to look at, you know, and then the other thing you could say with him is, you know, Chicago, whatever they, you know, if they gave Pete a hard time as far as when they played him, you know, what are some of the things that he liked, then that will also factor into it.
Was Desai the one we played yesterday that kept yelling, boom,
yes.
Boom?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's fired up. Loves that.
Yeah, you know he loves that. I guess and Pete's not going to say anything publicly, obviously, but I would love to know what's going to trigger him. What's he going to hear that he says, okay, now I'm in. This guy has got my attention. Like, I wonder if there's a buzzword or just a key phrase, something that guy comes in and says when he's looking at film or when he's drawing up a play on the grease board, whatever it is, you know, what's going to be that trigger for him? I'm just curious what it is. How much commonality does he need, or does he want to be challenged? Does he want somebody to come in and come in with a different perspective? I'm very curious where Pete's mindset is on this.
Yeah, I think Pete's more old school than people think. Everybody sees him as this progressive coach, but, you know, I remember the first year he got here and he told guys to switch seats, and the guys that didn't ended up being gone. Mm-hmm. You know, so everybody thinks of him as this player coach, but I think he is the right amount of old school. And for that reason, I think it might be hit and hustle, you know, just things like that are very basic. I feel like he might want to hear that. Maybe they've gotten away from that. Maybe they've gotten away because, you know, they were kind of a finesse defense, mm-hmm. right? You know, the way they played Bobby, and, you know, it was kind of like, hey, we're going to take the ball away. We're going to bend and not break. And, you know, I'd like to see him get back to, because, I mean, just as to break it down to one play, the hit that Cam Chancellor had in Super Bowl 48 on the crossing pattern, I'm trying to remember the receiver.
Brennan. He just passed away, didn't he? I can't believe
That's right.
Blanking on his name. Yeah. Somebody's going to text it in. I'm having a complete blank right now. But yes,
Lefko, put those pretzels down.
Yeah.
Been eating pretzels like a crazy
man. Demaryius Thomas? Was that who it was?
Yeah, there you go. Demaryius Thomas. Lefko had the name, but his mouth was full of pretzels, so he couldn't.
And they're making him thirsty.
But I mean, that, you know, that was, to me, at that time, I remember thinking, this is Pete Carroll. That's his stamp on this defense, is a guy like Cam Chancellor that would just hammer people. Remember, against the 49ers, he got a penalty for unnecessary roughness.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, it was necessary. It was super necessary.
Super necessary, that's right.
Because he knocked the ball out. But anyway, yeah, I feel like that might be the one thing that really gets to Pete. And, you know, it's just one clip that we heard from Desai there. But, you know, like I was saying, have you ever watched the coaches when they go through the bags? I mean, they're all jumping around and doing jumping jacks and high-fiving each other. And, you know, there's a lot of – I mean, Tom Catlin wouldn't have gone for that.
Tom not all that pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, standing over to the side. But I feel like that's what it might be for Pete. That's what really, really appeals to him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, what they do. And then you wonder about a guy in Clint Hurt, who everybody seems to like and regards very highly. He's obviously in the running for this job. But if he doesn't get it, is he gone? Does that defensive coordinator then bring in his own guys? And just by virtue of him wanting to be with familiar faces, sorry, Clint, you may be great, but I've got my guy here. You know, I'm just wondering about the other coaches on this staff and him being the most prominent because he's in the mix for this job. He could go from being a candidate to looking for a new team.
Yeah, you know, and there's a very I'm glad you brought that up because it's a pretty complicated process because Pete loves Clint Hurt, obviously, and he feels like Clint can be a head coach someday. That's the reason why he makes him the assistant head coach, He's been such since 2017 or 18.
Right.
So, you know, if let's say you hire one of these guys, it's let's say Desai, and they have a pretty good D-line coach, or I'm sorry, D-line in Chicago. And maybe there's a coach that he's like, I have to have this guy here. Well, then what does Pete do? Because, you know, Pete's like, hey, that's a non-starter. I mean, Clint Hurt's been my assistant head coach, you know, so – yeah, I mean, how much does that guy want to bring in? I mean, I don't know if Dickerson was a guy that Shane Waldron, Andy Dickerson, the run game coordinator, he coordinates the run game, Bob.
Yeah,
and, you know, was that a guy that was like, hey, I've got to have this guy? So that could get kind of complicated, and I'm sure that, you know, they're going to have to do a lot of work. But I wonder if, you know, maybe Pete's made a promise to a guy like Clint Hurt going, look, you're going to be my assistant head coach and you're going to be my D-line coach. What if Desai comes in and goes, hey, I got to have this D-line coach. I mean,
yeah, that's part of getting me here. You want me here, especially maybe even somebody like Donatel, who's got a resume, who's done it and could be more of that. You know, maybe somebody who's getting their first crack at a coordinator job wouldn't be as adamant. I don't know.
Good
We're
point.
Just speculating. But somebody who's seasoned, who's got a resume and a reputation like Donatel, who says, yeah, you want me here. Here's how this is going to work. This guy's coming with me. This guy's coming with me. So, yeah, Clint Hurt may have been a candidate, but now I've got a guy to take that spot. I got somebody to take John Glenn's spot with the linebackers. I've got somebody to take, you know, you can go down the list of their defensive coaches.
And Aaron Curry.
Yeah, I mean.
Deshaun Shedd.
I mean, all these guys we don't really talk about, but I wonder if they're sitting here going, man, what's my future look like?
Yeah. Well, and that's just the nature of the business. I mean, you've got to be used to that. And I think Pete's really sensitive. I you know, I don't know that there's a coach that is more adverse to firing people than Pete. I think, you know, he really, and that's why, you know, he doesn't do the Black Monday thing.
Yeah.
You know, he waited for a long time. So, yeah. You know what you need, Bob? You just need a coach to come in here and stack wins. Okay.
Is it that simple?
Bob, have you heard that phrase going around like wildfire?
Yes.
They say the NFL is the copycat league, but in sports media in this country, I mean, my God, everybody is saying stack wins, stack workouts. If I ever use that phrase, Bob, I want you to karate kick me in the nuts. All right?
Hard through the screen, but sure,
yeah.
Sure.
And then if the HR lady comes down, it's like, Bob, we have a problem. You know, I would go to her and say, I deserved it. No,
I requested
fire
it.
Bob. Yeah, you can't give a reprimand, Bob.
Dave, that's going to be on the T-shirt for your clothing line. I'm going to start printing them. Stack wins.
Stack wins.
It's going to be the best-selling T-shirt in the Wyman clothing line.
In single high safety.
Stack single high safety wins.
You know, there was a part of my brain, just a tiny part of my brain, that thought that I might have invented the phrase matchup nightmare. Because I was saying it like in 2010 and 11.
You're like, that's mine.
And I thought maybe Brock took it to Bristol or something like that. And then, but no, not really. But
I came up with punchable face, but I saw other people using it. Yeah. I don't recall hearing that from anybody else. I thought I came up with that.
I haven't heard punchable face. I heard hit me face. You got a hit me face.
I haven't heard that
not
one.
Punchable face.
That's good. Yeah.
But yeah, you got to stack wins. You got to stack workouts. You got to stack good plays. You got to, you know, oh my gosh, everybody's saying it now. Please stop.
And by the way, somebody is saying, and you guys can text in throughout the show, 421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. 253 says, wasn't expecting Dave to be quoting Jorge Masvidal today. LMA.
Oh yeah, that's right. Super necessary.
That's
my guy.
Yeah.
It's my favorite MMA guy.
And I was there when he said it.
Any thought that maybe that was unnecessary? Oh, super necessary. Because the guy was like partially knocked out.
He was all the way out. He was, as you called, zombie armed. He was and legs. The body was rigid. And then he received another blow or two at that point.
Do you think that maybe zombie arms might be? I know that, you know, the Matrix thing. I've been saying that since 2004 when they have, you know, those hits where it's like, you can't, you know, this isn't the Matrix. You can't freeze in midair.
Yeah.
And I know Moyer.
Are other people saying that now?
No, I don't know. But they used to always give me a hard time. Like, yeah, Dave, it's not the Matrix. We know. And I'm like, yeah. If I hear somebody else saying that, I'm going to be.
You are the only one I've heard say that. So if I hear it from somebody else, I'm going to have to call them out.
Who do you think started the stack thing?
Well, somebody just texted it in, said it's a military saying that's
I guess
comes from stack bodies. I don't know if that's real or not, but that's what just the 206 is saying. Yeah, I know. It got a little dark there, but that's what they're saying. Maybe they're messing with us. I don't know. You know our texters, they like to mess with us every now, especially on a Friday, which mean texts will come up in the 5 o'clock hour, so you can send in your mean text throughout the show. We'll see if our buddy Adam Ray sends them in. He's in Australia. Filming the second season of The Young Rock. So we'll see if he's listening and enter some submissions and perhaps a new nickname for Thumb over there behind the board.
Fudge. You mean Fudge?
Yeah. Fudge. Let's take two.
Well, the win has indeed become a win streak. And a Kraken allowed a goal all of 38 seconds in.
He didn't even laugh. Didn't even acknowledge it.
I was ready to roll. I had to get to the
story. Didn't even acknowledge
here.
It.
Trying to talk about the Kraken. They actually had it's a big deal.
You're interrupting Thumb.
I prefer Fudge. They allowed a goal just 38 seconds in, of course, but bounced back with three straight goals, held on for the 3-2 win over the Sharks. Now it's their first time winning back-to-back games since the end of November, and a chance to keep it going tonight. They have another game against the Blues.
What's been their longest streak, this win streak?
I think like three.
They won three in a row?
I think it's just two, actually.
Yeah, well, I was so just looking at their results the other day, and I only see two, man.
Two is so
a couple chunks of two in a row. Yeah, chance of the longest win streak of the season.
They desperately need it. I mean, I'm happy for them because, they're quality guys. We had such a great conversation with John Forslund earlier in the week. If you missed that, it's on the podcast page for you. But it's a tough season. Expansion team. They're trying to find it. You know, the heart of the team and Brandon Tanev has been lost for the year. They lose 9 in a row. They got games being postponed and shifted around. So this is good stuff. Hopefully, stretch it to 3. Let's set a new mark here.
Yeah, 4 times they've had a 2-game win streak. So this could be huge. It'd be first 3-game win streak. Everything's a first, right?
That's right.
First ever for everything. Well, how about this? The Carolina Panthers are reportedly hiring former Giants head coach Ben McAdoo as their offensive coordinator. Now, he went 13-15 in the 2 years that he was in New York as their head coach. And then McAdoo was out of football for a few years, was the quarterback coach for the Jaguars in 2020, and spent last year as that, you know, well-defined consultant role with the Cowboys.
Are any of those stops, like great marks on his record? I mean, how was the quarterback play in Jacksonville last year?
No, 2020, so even before Trevor Lawrence.
I'm still referring to last season since this one's still going.
Oh, okay.
But yes, in 2020, how was it? Not good. They drafted the quarterback of the future in Lawrence with the number one overall pick, and you look at how the Cowboys season ended, and he was nothing but a punchline in New York, if you recall. So this is an interesting hire at best.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much Scott Fitterer has to do with it. You know, he's done a pretty good job. He was here, of course, in Seattle under John Schneider. And most important, you know, I think he's really good because he's my neighbor, Bob.
That's how you know people are good, if they live by you.
You know, whenever you say the consultant, I always picture like a guy whispering in the coach's ear. Like, hey, maybe you should try this.
Yeah,
that's your consultant. I have no idea because the Seahawks have had that. I'm trying to remember his name. We'd hang out on the road, but he was a GM for the Colts, big guy that played. Dang, yeah, it's terrible that I don't remember. Mm. I'm just losing his name. But anyway, he was a consultant here, and he would be on the road, come on the road and stuff. So I don't really know. Exactly.
We got to get them all in a room, figure out passing, running game coordinators, and consultants. Yeah. What is your job? Explain, please. All right. Take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Does the risk outweigh the upside of hiring a guy who has never been a defensive coordinator before? Talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Big Ray Roberts will join us on the program. So stay tuned for that conversation. 4 o'clock with the professor, John Clayton, and Dave Craig at 5 o'clock as Dave shows up. For those of you watching on the video stream, That just caught me. I just, for 710sports.com, click the video feed. You'll see a new version of Dave Wyman there. This is the look your wife likes, right?
Bob, I'm unveiling my clothing line.
Yeah, you and I texted pictures back and forth of our clothing line. At least how I picture people imagine them being day in, day out.
Yeah. My wife loves this look right here.
Yeah, you're wearing looks like an old Sonics headband. Looks like something Jack Sigma would have worn back in the day, or Dennis Johnson, and you've got the Mountain Dew t-shirt on.
Yeah, it's part of my new clothing line. That's a good Very look. Affordable, Bob.
Love
any headband. Man. Any man can wear it.
You're right. Now, would any man wear it, though, is the question. But those of you who are on the video stream, you can see what I'm laughing at here. But we will have Mean Text coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. And Lefko, you were just telling me something right before Dave appeared on screen. Are people getting annoyed that we let Adam Ray submit his Mean Texts?
Yeah. Let's see. Where did the texts go? A couple texts.
Not just you.
I'm fine with it.
I don't think you find his nicknames very funny, but go ahead.
Oh, just one text, but great. We have to compete with Adam Ray again. I thought this is a show for the people, but it turns out you just pander to the social elite.
The social. He'll love to be referred to as the social elite. He's a listener. He was a listener to the show before I ever knew him. He's just like all of you guys. He's an everyman. He might be wearing that
headband another one.
And Mountain Dew shirt right
Adam
now.
R. is a pro and has his own stage. Keep him off of Mean Texts. It's like when a 30-year-old shows up at a frat party still trying to be one of the guys.
Wow.
Man. Now they're roasting Adam.
Yeah, he'll love that.
Gets lumped
though.
In by association.
He's a listener. He will text all the time like, "Oh man, I heard you guys talking about this, but that was great," or "Here's what I think." I mean, he listens every day no matter where he's at in the world. So he's the same as everybody else out there.
I don't think you want to get in a battle like this with him.
No, that's a losing battle. That's a losing battle. I you know what I did is I actually screenshot some of the ones that were ripping him last week, and I sent them to him. He's like, "Oh, I'm going to get these guys." So we'll see. We'll see if he comes up with something. But your submissions are just as welcome as his are. Everybody's welcome. 421-3776, 421 ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. All right. Looking at the risk of hiring a guy who's never been a defensive coordinator. I was thinking about this last night, Dave, and we kind of brought it up with Paul, and we'll play the clip here in a minute, but just a thought, and I don't know if and this is not a shot at defense, it's not a shot at defensive minds or anything, but I feel like play calling is a little bit more complex on the offensive side. There's a lot more moving parts, but perhaps I'm wrong about that. I'm just wondering about the ramp-up period, the learning curve for a guy who's never been a coordinator, and you throw him in there at defensive coordinator, does he become sort of like Shane Waldron in that, you know, you're seeing it for the first time, he's making his mistakes, he's got to get used to calling those plays. Is there a fear that you could be seeing a version of what we saw from Shane Waldron, understanding what he had to deal with on the defensive side of things if you were to go with somebody that's never done it before?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that risk. If you ask me, though, I feel like it'll get more simple than it will complicated. I mean, some guys have a feel for, like Bill Belichick, for example. I keep referring to that book, but, you know, he would always figure out what the opposing team's Achilles heel is. You know, like in the Super Bowl that they won, it was like, you have to hit Marshall Faulk every play. Whether he goes out, you know, whether he's running the ball, goes out in a pass pattern, whatever, they got that done. The other thing was like with Jim Kelly, I can't remember if it was like he needs to throw for this many yards. Like if he's throwing for high yardage, then that's the combination to lose. So some guys are like that. And, you know, I think it just takes a special mind. But I think for the most part, I would agree. I mean, I think you keep it really simple and you let your players make plays. So, yeah, I would say it's more as far as a new coordinator goes. It's more likely that you would have growing pains on the offensive side than the defensive side.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. And, you know, but look, defense can get very complicated. And like I said, you know, with Belichick, and it's, you know, all the different looks and everything. And then the guys that really know what they're doing, when you have guys like Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman, you can change defenses after the snap. And that was something DK Metcalf talked about, how that was so difficult for him to get down after, you know, being a pro in his first year, after being in college and just not, you know, not seeing any of that. So, yeah, there's some things, you know, and I think a lot of that has to do with the players. But I would agree. I would agree that it's, you know, it's more likely that the offensive coordinator would struggle as far as growing pains.
Yeah, and we had Paul on yesterday, and if you guys missed that conversation, that is available for you on the podcast page as well at 710 Sports. But I asked him that question about, you know, just a guy that hasn't done it. Are you fearful they might struggle?
Handle pressure in certain situations. And, you know, you went from a position coach to now you're managing coaches and players. It's a different bag of tricks for you. So no question. I think they're going to go find someone who is experienced. They may bring in an additional person who, you know, maybe they're younger and or came from college who really has been creative in some type of pass defense. Again, I would say there's only so much you can do. To me, it's, hey, how do we put these guys in the best position to create success?
He talks about an additional person. What's he talking about there, do you think?
I don't know. You know, well, one of the things that he brought up, Paul, in that quote, and I was just thinking about, is that you have to also manage the coaches. So, I mean, if you're a linebacker coach, you're just managing your guys. Now, you know, it's a lot more. It's a lot more work. And, you know, you've got to make sure coaches are getting it done and see what they're doing. There's so much more to look at. So that would be one of the reasons why, you know, and maybe – well, he's talking about maybe bringing in like a guy to be like your consultant, yeah, as a defensive coordinator. There, maybe
you're gonna hire a new DC, and they'll be this other guy who just follows him around and whispers in his ear.
Exactly. Yeah, but I mean, but that's why you have pass game coordinators and run game coordinators and stuff like that, is because it's all the things that bring it together. Like I was saying, I thought it was a decent description of the pass. Anytime you're dropping into pass, the zone or the man and how you play that falls under the realm of the passing game coordinator, because you're not going to be talking to the whole defense. You're not going to be talking to the guys rushing the passer. So, you know, maybe he has a guy like that, a guy that, you know, matches up personnel. I remember, you know, Lofa, when he coached briefly, they had him, you know, during game day, his only thing was to, well, I don't know if it was the only thing, but it was like the main part of what he did was getting the personnel, you know, like, hey, they're in 13 or they're in 23 or whatever, which is, you know, how many tight ends, how many running backs, how many receivers. And, you know, he was kind of bored by that because he's got such a good football mind. But, you know, there's that, though. That's, you know, possibly what he could be talking about, because there's a lot to think about as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's going to be this is so fast. I know these guys aren't household names that everybody's familiar with. We're not that familiar with them, but it's just fascinating to see how Pete's going to handle this, and if he's going to go with somebody that's had experience, or he's just going to go with a young guy who's fresh and's got new ideas. It's going to be very curious to see how he handles it. Meanwhile, turning to baseball, I saw this story last night, interesting story about the Mariners being the worst in baseball at one critical aspect of the game. We'll tell you what that is coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, Big Ray Roberts will join us, talk some Seahawks with him, so stay tuned for that. As Dave makes another wardrobe change, look at you, just each commercial break, a new outfit.
Bob, I told you I'm launching my new clothing line. It's just called Wyman.
Okay.
Well, yeah, let's
okay.
explain, because at 3:30 we're going to do something that kind of plays off this. So Dave is showcasing everything, and I appreciate that.
I just think, you know,
you're hustling during the breaks.
I've really been using my talents to their fullest, and I feel like this could start some kind of a craze. Got a Mariner hat on today this segment, I should say. Because we're doing Mariners, and yeah, this is a rare find right here, Bob.
The Smokin' Jay Cutler shirt.
Smokin' Jay Cutler. I don't know if you remember that craze on the internet where,
oh yeah,
it, you know, every situation that he is in, it looks like he could have a cigarette in his mouth.
Yeah, that's the look on his face.
I think, though, he got, like, you can't buy these anymore, because I was going to get one for the professor, and couldn't find it anywhere.
Mm. You think he would have?
I think
John
he put the kibosh
guy?
On it.
Is John a t-shirt guy?
Yeah. I thought it was funny, though. He used to give Smoking Jay a pretty hard time.
So those pictures were hilarious, man. That was a funny campaign. But all right. Well, meanwhile, we are talking Mariners, as you said. And I saw this. And by the way, this hour, Wyman and Bob, as I said, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. I was looking at this story last night, and ESPN senior Major League Baseball writer Dave Schoenfeld wrote a. I guess he just started looking at one individual player, and I can't remember which player it was. Might have been J.P. Crawford.
Yeah.
That inspired this whole thing. And he started looking at, basically, he identified a weird stat for each team. He went through every team in the league, all 30, and identified some kind of oddball stat about him. And I sent you guys the piece last night, but he said two things here about the Mariners. First of all, J.P. Crawford is what started it, ranked as, quote, the worst base runner in Major League Baseball. And he said he was 3-for-9 in stolen bases, not aggressive in taking extra bases, and that the Mariners overall were last in Major League Baseball in taking an extra base at 34%. How about that?
Did that stand out to you?
Yes. I mean, he's your leadoff hitter, and he's certainly not a base-stealing machine by any stretch, and I know he wasn't that. I guess I didn't really focus on how aggressive he was in taking the extra base, you know, and for that matter, you knew the team wasn't loaded with speed. I mean, and he points out that, you know, they had people like Seager, who's not fast, and Ty France is not a fast guy, and Mitch Haniger's got decent speed, but he's not fast. He's faster than those guys. But, you know, your fastest guy on the team was Dylan Moore, who's hit 182 for the season or whatever it was. So, you know, his speed is kind of negated because he's never on base. So you don't have a ton of team speed. And apparently the guys that do is it adds up to him, you know, we're last in taking that extra base in all of baseball. So I'm wondering, is that, A, how much does that surprise you and fans out there? A 90-win team, won just a bevy of one-run games throughout the season, which I don't know is tenable. But B, does that emphasize what their focus in the offseason could be? And that is, hey, A, we're going to go after some speed, or B, we're going to really emphasize with the guys we have here, you know, let's get aggressive. Let's take advantage of the potential opportunities out there to take that extra base.
Being a I'm not a baseball expert or anything, and I'm sure people in sabermetrics and everything would say that, you know, I'm wrong, but I am all for being aggressive on the base paths and forcing an outfielder or whoever to make a perfect throw. You know, I mean, to me, I would be much more aggressive as far as that goes. But the only thing I remember with base running, I remember who it was, Bob. It was Luis Torrens. And we were watching, the Little League World Series?
Yeah.
And I think there was a guy in first and second. They hit it to the shortstop, and the guy on second runs to third and gets thrown out. And, you know, we were thinking, oh, yeah, well, it's a Little League thing. And then I swear it was the next day that Torrens did that same thing.
Yeah. The right guys need to be aggressive. The right guys need to be aggressive,
not Luis.
Yeah, no, no.
Who was really good in spots. But I think he wasn't the clutch hitter that, you know, would come in. And I don't know. He was just surprising to me.
He had some big moments at the plate. He certainly did. Yeah, for a guy who looked as lost behind the plate and at the plate as he did, and then got sent down, and then did not tear it up in the minor leagues, but was brought back up because they needed to get a body up there. The injuries were piling up. They needed a body. And then the beauty is when he did get called back up, A, he started hitting decidedly better than he did before, and in clutch spots. His overall numbers, you look at him and you go, he wasn't bad. Well, most of his damage was done, it felt like, in crucial situations. And B, they took his catcher's gear and hit it, which I thought was amazing. It was the right decision because he was brutal behind the plate. So,
where else did he? Couldn't he play left field too? Was he?
No, I think they had him at first base.
Oh, is that where it was? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you want him running the outfield.
You know what's kind of interesting is J.P. Crawford, is he slow?
No.
I mean, he's not. You said that, who'd you say was the fastest guy on the team? Or
Dylan
do we even
Moore.
Know?
Dylan Moore. Yeah.
You know, it's funny to me that there's not like a standard, like, first to second base time. you know, like the 40 in the NFL.
I think the scouts and the teams have those kind of numbers. They're just not widely repeated amongst fans the way we all know 40 times. Oh, 4-3, 40, amazing. 4-4, four, four, yeah. four, we're all dialed in and speaking that language. We're so used to it with football. I think they do have them with the teams, and they have those numbers from home to first and, you know, second, how quickly they get out of the box, things like that.
Yeah, it's just surprising that we don't hear it, you know. But also, you know, it's about, I mean, there's a knack for it, right? I mean, you know, first of all, the lead off and, you know, all of that certainly matters. And it's just all entirely a timing thing, right? And, you know, if you have a knack for that, because that, you know, just JP doesn't come off as slow, but 3-for-9 in stolen bases.
Yeah.
That's really not good for him.
No, not for especially your leadoff hitter. You tend to expect those guys to have a decent level of speed. You're not going to have some lead foot as your leadoff hitter. And B, they're going to be fairly adept at stealing bases, which, you know, again, that was just part of his game I just really didn't focus on. And we just got so caught up in the results and who was coming up with a clutch play, whether it was in the field or at the plate at the perfect time. And that was just an element of their game that I honestly, as I read that thing last night, went, wow.
Yeah.
Didn't even really consider how aggressive they were or weren't. Or I don't remember moments where I'm like, oh man, how did you not take second? How did you not get to second on that? How did you not get to third? I mean, maybe here and there, but it wasn't something that stood out to me.
Who were the first and third base coaches? Was it?
It was.
Do you know?
Yeah, it was Manny Acta and
Perry Hill.
Perry Hill. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, the good news is that's something you can absolutely work on, right? I mean, it doesn't have to do with, like in JP's case, it doesn't have anything to do with his speed.
Yeah. Listen, Albert Pujols was considered a very good base runner. He wasn't fast ever, but he was considered a very smart, good base runner for a number of years because of his timing, because when he would choose to be aggressive. All right, coming up, we got a lot of questions about this Seahawks O-line, and we've got the perfect guy to provide answers, Ray Roberts. He'll join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.